Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud. I'm going to do a special where I'm going to dive into this because the history of our debt and the whole purpose in creating the debt has actually provided a huge transfer of wealth and I will say a tightening of illegitimate laws, constraints, and so forth. Folks, you got to understand, the federal government never had the ability, does not have the constitutional authority to spend money on things that they don't have the authority to do. Now, just because as things went along, the states basically said, yeah, you know what? If we go along with it, then that's kind of okay. That doesn't make it legitimate. Even if the states are taking money and everybody is on the take, it doesn't make it legitimate. When you get a whole bunch of people to infiltrate an organization and basically execute a masterful plan of deceit and fraud using that organization illegitimately, does not transfer that responsibility over to the shareholders, over to the bondholders. Those are those who have delegated that authority. So we need to dive into it, and I kind of want to do that because there's a lot of people that keep on looking. The debt is not the problem. Taxes are not the problem. The spending on things with no authority to do it, that's your problem. So, what we also want to do is kind of go over the obligatories here. So, you're welcome to join Loudoun Liberty Prayer Circle, or if you're interested in, if you have one and you're interested in sharing your time and space and so forth. And folks, let me point you to a good resource. Now, a lot of people use Zoom, and maybe it would be good if you're going to have a prayer circle to use Zoom, but that costs money. And I would say the reason why it would be good to use Zoom is maybe having prayer using the Chinese, spy network would, maybe affect them. Maybe it would have a positive, hearing people pray all the time. Sometimes it has an effect. And I think there might even be cases in the scriptures where the enemy of the Lord's anointed, were affected by those who they had conscripted or those who they had imprisoned and heard their prayers. So maybe Zoom would be okay. I would just not tell you to spend a penny. Use free Zoom if you're going to do it. And if you're going to actually, do other things with it other than prayer, where it might be sensitive information, your plans, your operations, what you're planning on doing, and so forth, I would recommend, the source I would recommend would be, at this point, free conference call. Now, it may be, old school. It's not really old school, but free conference call is just that. You don't have to pay, and the services you have are more than adequate to do what you need to do. Now, if you're interested and you want to do those things and you set it all up, then let me know and we will put it on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page where people can. And you know what? If we get enough people, we might actually create a prayer page. So people can just go to the prayer page and go, and actually so people could kind of go around and listen and participate in a prayer so that, you know, they get to broaden their horizons. And who knows, you might actually find, you know, a prayer circle and people that you really relate to, and so forth. It's a good way of actually finding like-minded people. I'll leave it at that. Your campaign, if you are planning on running an election, then your campaign begins today, and it is not a financial campaign to run signs and so forth and to try to play nice-y, you know, political theatrics. Your campaign needs to start today in actually providing the voters the information on how the person, these people that you're targeting in office, are not fulfilling their oath. Yeah, they got things to do, and almost all those things that they do has nothing to do with their oath of office. And they do everything they can to avoid fulfilling their oath of office. They stay away from the Constitution. They stay away from those kind of things because I'm sure they're being told to do that. But if you challenge them and say, you need to support this, you need to actually call upon the State House, your county commissioners, you need to tell them that they need to call upon the State House to actually shut down this unconstitutional, you know, actions by the federal government regarding the invasion or unconstitutional treaties. We've got a whole long list of petitions you can use. You can use these things. Now, don't be afraid because you may not know or understand. You're not alone. There are lots of people that, you know, they don't want to read all these things, but they want to do something. Get involved, get educated, and start petitioning. I will tell you, the more committed you are and the more you lean into this, the more you're going to get out of it, the faster you're going to become smart on it. You know, sometimes, based on necessity, people tend to figure out what they need to do just to survive. And you'd be surprised how resilient we are. But again, you're not alone, so you don't have to actually take these things on like, you know, it's you against the world. We're here to help. And there's plenty of ways that you can grow your organization and get your organization involved and actually help other people, you know, be successful as well. When it comes to uniting on the Constitution and having success in doing that, your success is our success. It's everybody's success. Because as we see people actually doing things, then and getting people to actually fulfill their oath, finally saying, you know what, I'm going to do this. I know there's a lot of people, and I actually know people, that really want to get in office. I mean, they want their shot at doing it. But if it's just about you being in office, then I think we've lost it. Now, it's one thing if you can offer, you know, a better path for constitutional compliance and those types of things, but 9 times out of 10, it really shouldn't matter who is in office. It doesn't matter whether these people are connected to all sorts of people. They can't do anything that is not enumerated to them. They're only been given these very few and defined powers. That's how it is in the states and so forth. And we're actually realizing that, and you'll realize this too. Go look at your state constitution. You'd be surprised what little powers you've delegated to these guys. Now, there are some very progressive states that have actually been very active in amending their constitution, trying to do it right, and in some cases getting it done. But that's another problem. But most of them still have not done the due diligence in getting everything done. You'd be surprised. I mean, the most progressive state that I have seen constitutionally is California, and there's a plethora of things that they do not have the power to do, and they're doing them. So anyway, that takes care of the obligatories. Now, One of the things I wanted to share with you is over the weekend, I engaged in some conversations. And just so you know, we started with Montana. So I've launched out and I've sent an email out. And this email is actually going to get posted along with the five-page, I'll just call it the fact sheet regarding the truth about the 17th Amendment. Now, there's a little preface on the front end of this that kind of helps people understand. It's not like I've been sitting on this. As a matter of fact, I wrote an article that exposed the problem with the 17th Amendment, a few different problems with it. And I got to rewrite that because it needs to be a little bit more academic, and I can bolster it up because I've found plenty more resources, or I should say citations that I can add to this to help buoy this up and actually help strengthen its position and argument. Nevertheless, the fact remains that the states have had the power to get their suffrage out of the senators who represent them in the U.S. Senate. When I say the states, I mean the state legislatures. They never lost their representation. Now, they complain, and they complain, and they bark, they moan, they whine. They do everything. They make every sound known to man. And yet, they have not done what it takes to actually do this. So we've sent this out to Montana. Now, there are those that I'm just telling you, you know, they're puffed up in, you know, how good they are, how righteous they are, how conservative. And I'm going to capital every letter in conservative for you. Conservative. And they believe they're constitutional. And as a matter of fact, you'll notice, because I had to add this, this is the time of year where every single one of these state houses, Montana is no exception. Every single one of these state houses that have not called for the convention, these red states, that have not called for the convention of states, in other words, the CONCON, well, they have an onslaught every other year, and this is the year that they do it. Every other year, because these typically the second year is a budgetary year, it's a scaled back session because there's not that much to do. So my point is that these legislators have to suffer through these binary arguments from the John Birchers, Eagles Forum, you know, the anti-conventionites, as well as the conventionites, those who are trying to convince you to do this. Now, the reality is, here supposedly, in this onslaught going throughout these different state legislature sessions, these experts on Article 5 are there telling everybody, you know, why you shouldn't do it and why we need to do it. And not one of those experts has actually come out and said, oh, hey, by the way, why is it you guys aren't getting your suffrage out of the state, out of your senator in the U.S. Senate, or your two senators out of the U.S. Senate? What's the problem? Why aren't you guys doing that? Huh? Because it's actually in Article 5. The suffrage that's guaranteed to every state that they would never lose their equal suffrage in the Senate without their consent. They would have to give consent to do so. And guess what? The 17th Amendment didn't create that consent. It didn't have, just because they passed the 17th Amendment, didn't change the responsibility of senators in the U.S. Senate to actually vote and provide the state legislature their suffrage. In a representative government, suffrage is everything. We have a representative who is actually supposed to be representing you, which is why I've always taken umbrage with all of these alleged conservative congressmen or even our legislators to say, oh, I'm giving you suffrage. I'm doing what... And they're not doing what's good for us. They don't represent us. And they're actually basically trying to butter their bread. I mean, this is why every congressperson and every senator is filthy rich, because they're being bought off by the lobbyists. the global corporations. If you've never watched it, and as a matter of fact, in talking to Tammy, she said that she could find The Swamp, so I need to ask her this coming week, has she found The Swamp, and did she get a chance to watch it on whatever channel, YouTube or what have you? Now, The Swamp I'm talking about is not this big, you know, or actually a low-budget movie. The Swamp that I'm talking about is a movie that exposes how your legislators in Congress are bribed and what they have to do in getting onto committees, the fact that they have to pay to get on these committees, but they don't have to actually write a check at that moment. They will make the money while they're on the committees because the committees you get assigned to, you get paid for voting one way or you get paid for voting another way. In other words, regardless of what you do, you're going to make money. And this all comes in from the lobbyists. And this all pays the party apparatus. Now, you've heard me say that the party, there's actually two sides of the party and they're not connected. The grassroots, which you're familiar with, which you're actually active in going to your central committees and all of that, that is just lipstick on a pig. And the real party is the public servants who are basically corrupt, and they're basically bought and paid for, and they do the bidding is how they're being told, and they just, they get in there and they do what they're told. That's how it's done. So you should watch this because Tom Massey and a few others are in there. And it's a very eye-opening problem. I mean, folks, when you look at this, you watch this, you're going to go, oh my gosh, I need a shower. You just feel that dirty. So anyway, back to this 17th Amendment. We're going to get this posted. And I'm going to actually post this to the different state legislators as we actually get the emails out. And what I'm doing, because I don't have new emails, I'm just basically jumping forward on the concept that, you know what? I've got 2023 email addresses, and that's what I'm going to use. Now, 2023, 2024, I think they're about the same. So there's going to be people that got elected in this last election that won't get these emails. And that's unfortunate because I just don't have the time to do all of that, to do this show, to provide mentoring, help, and guidance. I can't do everything. If you have your state legislature's email addresses for your representatives and for your senators, please let me know and send me that information. We'll work with you so we can get this because we need a repository. We need to maintain this because I think it's important to try to help them so that they can actually have the opportunity to stand up. Because bottom line, if we're not explaining these things, because they're just as illiterate and just as stupid as every other person out there. Remember, we have talked about this before. Only those people who really listen to the show and actually have read and go through these documents with us. This is a very small class of people in America. You know more about the Constitution than probably the leadership of the John Birch Society. Now, you may not have confidence in yourself, but that doesn't mean you don't understand. Because when you actually start hearing, because they try to sell themselves as the pompous, we know the most. And I know I'm coming off as pompous because I'm telling you that the facts that we give you, going through the Tory Acts and everything else, we've literally laid out this framework and how this nation literally evolved. Now, there's these feel-good stories about, Christianity and its involvement in this nation. And there's also this really feel-good story of how the divine hand of providence basically inspired and directed these men over the course of from the Revolution to that Constitutional Convention. And it didn't end there, my friends. It seems like, because I've come to the conclusion that every single amendment, even the progressive amendments, I see his hand. When I look at the 17th Amendment, is it any surprise that what these nefarious players were trying to do in creating the 17th Amendment, they didn't do what actually they convinced you what they did? And so I see this huge shortcoming in the 17th Amendment. Only God knew what to do with that and to convince them, you're just going to change the process of how they get selected and the process of how to replace them. But you're not going to touch those parts of the Constitution that were sacred, that reserved and protected and guaranteed the state legislators' suffrage in the Senate, which is why the 17th Amendment fell terribly short. The progressives created this problem out at the state houses, and they basically went off and they all bought off on it, and they went around telling everybody, the state legislature is not going to have any suffrage anymore. And every state legislature to this day, they really believe that they've lost their suffrage. And the fact is, they haven't. When and who will be the first state? So we've got this contest. I'd like to send this off to Utah, Wyoming, and as many red states. And if you live in a red state, give me your state legislator's email address. All of them. Give me all of their email addresses, and I will get this to them. Because, folks, I think this is a great contest to find out which state is going to wake up and realize, hey, this guy's right. The Constitution literally does actually preserve our suffrage in the Senate right there in Article 5. And we've been listening to these idiots come in and talk to us of why we need to have a constitutional convention. And then the other idiots telling us, no, nullify. Just ignore the things you don't want to deal with. I'm telling you, folks, we've been lied to and deceived and misled by these guys. But that's their job, because they make money off of the problem. They know if they convene this convention, they won't solve the problem. The other side knows that if you actually nullify, you just try to ignore these laws and so forth and what government is doing, then you won't solve the problem either. And the problem will continue to exist, so that we will continue to call another convention and we'll continue to call, or the other side will continue to say, just ignore more stuff. Just ignore more. As we're all heading towards the precipice to basically be furled into the darkness, into the arms of who, you know, we don't even want to imagine. We don't want to go there, folks. So what we want to do is, there's been a lot of news on the Doge, whatever you want to call it, doggy, and what Elon Musk is doing. Now, last Friday, just a couple of days ago, I kind of talked about, you know, Elon Musk and the fact that he's in a position, this guy's smart. It's not that he's not smart. But this guy has been buoyed up, and he has been basically pumped with all sorts of money so that he can do more and more and more. I'm going to tell you, when you look at Starlink and when you look at some of the things he's doing, he's trying to position himself as the almighty, you know, owner of information. When you really look at taking over this internet with Starlink and so forth and 5G, he's not your friend. This guy is only serving himself. And, he's going in and he's, you know, what we see as good is only temporary. So I'm here to tell you, folks, that we're going to dive into some of the things that they're talking about solving, like, you know, shutting down some of the VA and so forth. And we're going to actually tell you what constitutionally really needs to happen so that you can actually start judging for yourself. What do we want? Constitution Compliance. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's start off with the VA. Now, we all know that these guys that have gone into the military and basically have, you know, put their life on the line, they deserve everything that they walked into. Now, to be clear, this is a legitimate employment. When the militia is federalized to bring people in, they have a responsibility of trying to maintain or what have you. Now, even though they kind of have taken latitude and they violated the Constitution by changing the militia and everything else, we have to acknowledge that out of all of the little money pots that they've been playing with, this is a constitutional money pot. And they knew this, and this is why they have used this money pot to actually bolster up businesses and so forth that would actually cooperate with them. In other words, they didn't care whether they were using the Colt or, you know, the Glock or whatever. They wanted and they awarded contracts not because of performance and what was best. They award contracts. We've seen this. They award contracts for those who offer the greatest level of support. And when we've seen this in really huge contract, and why is it you think that Amazon has won the cloud computing for the federal government on a no-bid contract? I mean, we saw this happen with the Cheneys. We've seen this time and time. As a matter of fact, Amazon operated for 10 years without making a profit, never getting delisted from the New York Stock Exchange. Why is that? Or NASDAQ, whichever it was. Why is it that they were never delisted because they never made a profit for all that time? Well, because they were protected by the federal government. They came in and said, look, we're going to do your spying for you. We're going to tell you, we're going to become the shopping center for everybody. And we're going to give you the personal data on all what all these people are buying. And so as they started reporting on every time you were logged in on their website, this is the old days, back in the 90s, because they didn't have all of the holes in the back end of the browsers back in those days. They were getting there, but they started creating cookies. They started creating these components in your browser to allow them on their one. Like today we have tabs. And most all the browsers will give you multiple tabs. And now that what you do on one tab, they can actually see everything else you've been doing, your purchase histories, your cookies. They're almost at a point where they basically have and can see and know everything you're doing in that browser. Now, I believe that they're trying to actually create this cross-pollination between all of the browsers, but there's just problems with that because many browsers do have these these barriers to keep from, you know, sharing, but it's just a matter of code. And then this is why they're constantly updating to make sure, like, Opera stays ahead of people that are trying to come in and spy on you. And supposedly, and who knows if they're really doing this or not? Who really knows unless you actually are in the, you know, in the, I'll just say, in behind those black doors where people go, oh yeah, look at all this good data we're getting from everybody. Because it's like with your phone. I'm going to get out of this rat hole right here. When you look at your phone, every app that you've downloaded on that phone, because the Android OS or the iPhone OS requires that you, you know, interface with the OS and so forth, they require that you are actually sharing certain information. Why is it you think that now on your computer and now on your phone or your mobile port computing device, you can have a, you can say something, or you could be doing something in your browser and next thing you know, everything is starting to port over to your social media where you start seeing ads, or you're somewhere on a page and you start seeing ads of those things that you were thinking about buying. If you've seen Minority Report, we are getting there because it's all about trying to separate you from your money, and it's all about trying to control you to make sure that, you know, you become the good customer that they want out of you. It's almost like, you know, you're not the customer anymore, you're the slave. When we look at what pharmaceutical companies are doing and everybody else, this is not good, folks. This is not good. Now, let's get back to the VA. So the VA was created to service those who left the military. And I am here to tell you that that should never have been done. What should have happened was the DOD should have actually, because they're the ones that create the file on you. They're the ones that actually know what you did. And so why is it that you get pushed off to the VA and then you have to go back and forth to prove to the VA what you did? I mean, that's been a nightmare for me. If I was right there still in DOD, I'd go, look, I mean, I was in these facilities with this, these types of carcinogens and toxic things and blah, blah, blah. And I would be able to make my case very quickly because they don't have to go look for it. They've got it. They've got the data. We don't have to request it, the VA, from DOD to get into the VA. The separation has just created this bureaucratic layer that makes it hard. And actually, so here's the whole point too. When we look at getting rid of the VA, okay, so we don't have to have the redundancy in administration. That's a huge cost. The other thing is, let's look at the redundancy in services. And what I mean by this is, how many of you know that with 9/11, the firefighters, cops, and the first responders, and everybody that, you know, was involved in the rescue and all of that, they got an elite deal with top quality health coverage and insurance and so forth and compensation. Huge, huge. Compare that to what they give those that are in the armed forces. This should never have happened. This injustice should never have happened. I'm telling you, had we actually said, you know what? We're so thankful for the first responders in New York. We're so thankful for all these things that these people did. And we're so, you know, we feel so bad about these people that were killed. But we can only give the life insurance that we've, you know, guarantee our service members. That's all. But technically, the people that died under that attack, why is the U.S. government actually responsible unless they were responsible that, you know, that happened? Technically, they did. But they don't want you to know that. And that'll never come forward. Operation Bajinka will forever and ever be gone because Sandy Berger destroyed the document. These guys covered, I mean, this is the constant problem. they have done everything they can to ensure plausible deniability and to ensure there is no evidence left. You know, for as smart as Clinton was, he sure made a lot of mistakes. Made a lot of mistakes in creating a paper trail on lots of little different things to where it sure bit him in the butt. Now, I'm not sure if that's an indictment on his intelligence or just how careless he was or how enabled he was in thinking he could get away with these things. But let me get back and harangue on this whole concept that if we ever get attacked, the whole compensation and everything else, it's militia pay. It is DOD pay. You shouldn't have. You should get the same service and the same care that we give the soldiers, the Marines, the sailors, and the airmen, and whatever, the space cadets, you know, for the new, and Coast Guarders or what have you. Nobody deserves better. Nobody. And I'll just say this, because these people that actually joined the service, they put their life on the line. And nine times out of ten, it doesn't matter. There are always politics that have driven, whether it be money or what have you, where people have died. You know, I don't see anybody bolstering and trying to say these guys didn't get a fair shake. Bottom line, when they created these contracts for you to join into the military, they should have honored them, but they haven't even honored that. No wonder nobody wants to get an umbrella coverage, you know, for what they did with 9/11 from the DOD. No wonder. They know that it might actually just go away in a year or two. So, the reality is that if we're going to have people serving this nation, they should be in the same coverage, the same services, and so forth. We can't, it's just, it's not just. We have to actually look and make sure, you know, whatever people are getting, they're getting something that is just and fair. I'm not trying to make, you know, things unreasonably overcompensated and so forth for the military, but I will tell you that if they've given you a contract when you come in to say you've got free medical and dental for life, they should be honoring that. And for those people who happen to, you know, go and respond for the 9/11, they should get what was currently active. You know, had things been different, had these people not just done the right thing, what would have ended up happening was the state of New York and probably the militia around New York would have been federalized, and they would have gone in to basically try to do this job. Now, to be honest with you, the Constitution must change. If we're talking about doing cleanup under a natural disaster, it's one thing that we were struck by a terrorist attack. That is a defense national security issue. Hurricanes, I'm sorry. However, when we have created weapon systems that have actually caused the damage, then we actually need to start putting people in the gallows and actually dangling from the rope. We need to hold people accountable. This is the biggest problem we face, is accountability. And this goes right back to the 14th Amendment and how the 14th Amendment guaranteed the holding public servants, all public servants who take an oath, accountable. So anyway, the federal employees being bought out, and this is kind of all together from the DOD, the VA, the medical funding and all of this. And now they're even talking about buying out federal employees, remaining contracts or buying out, you know, instead of you're getting a retirement, they're going to give you a stipend for that. What? No. As a matter of fact, the reality is this. Those jobs were probably, I would say, 90%+ of the federal employees that are working are not legitimate, constitutionally created jobs. These people should have known because we were illiterate. Okay, we're all at fault here. But if you had done any due diligence and research, you should have been scratching your head going, hey, you know, wow, we're working in the Health and Human Services here, and this is not a constitutional role responsibility. Technically, this needs to be enumerated in the Constitution for us to actually have these positions. This is great. We're making all this money. But, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't exist. The same thing with education. The same thing with labor. I could go on and on and on and on and on. The point is that all of these positions, even with the VA, all of these positions should never have been created. They were actually created to grow government so that the government could actually spend more money, because it was all about spend, spend, spend. Take more debt, more debt, more debt, so that we could get to a point where we financially collapse. This is all being done to do this. They've done this before. The problem was in the 1930s when we actually had a bankruptcy. It wasn't, we weren't at a point where we could have actually been taken over. But it was a point where they could actually change the rules of the game unconstitutionally, illegitimately, because the whole fact that we went bankrupt on spending things that they had no authority to spend on. I forget how many times, I believe I've been told that we went bankrupt at least twice, maybe more than that, but it doesn't matter. The reality is when federal government goes and spends money and takes on debt for spending money on things they have no authority to do, it is fraud. It's fraud. It's just like, you know, somebody going into the company and actually getting their hands on money and coming out and actually giving you money from that company. That person has done fraud. And because it's a private company, you can go to jail. But because these are public servants, we can't really hold them accountable for anything other than treason. So, I mean, we can hang them. And we can go after, so this becomes the real problem. And I know that there's a lot of people that want justice, and I have these conversations all the time. People want this gold back. People want these things back. And knowing what I know, that's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be. Because when we actually start looking at the courts, let's just go down this path before I dive into this, you know, seeking justice. When we look at why Trump is actually going down and playing these legal games, it's not really Trump doing this. This is his administrators that have basically said, this is how we're going to do this, because they keep everybody in play. What do I mean by this? Now, they're going down and negotiating, and these negotiation processes are going to see their day in court. Everybody gets their fingers at they get their fingers fed when they start creating these things. And when they go to dismantle these things, everybody still gets a stipend. It may be a final stipend, but, you know, the courts are going to be packed and they are going to make their money. You got to remember, it doesn't matter what the verdict is. You know, what if the federal court actually loses? Because I'll tell you what, if the federal court lost the case and they had to pay for the cost and everything else, in other words, you know, the state that was being, you know, called or dragged into court saying, you know, you can't stop us from doing these things unconstitutionally. And it's proven that they actually can't, you know, the federal government can't be doing these things in the state where the state's going to win. Well, the court can't allow that to happen. They actually have to rule in favor, because if they had to pay, then they would lose money. But if they win, then you lose money. One of the reasons why they've been gaming us for the longest time. The court system is a money mill. everybody involved in the court system, all the offices from lawyers and jurists and administrators, all of these people employed by the courts, this huge court system, it's huge. They're all making money. And who pays for it? You and I, the taxpayers. So the courts need to actually be challenged as far as their jurisdiction and why are they seeing, because DOGE needs to do this. They actually need to go straight into the courts and actually look at the size of the courts, look at the cases that they're bringing in and scrutinize, hey, hold on here. How is it that you have jurisdiction over labor, you know, these federal employee laborers, when that does not arise under this Constitution? Federal courts got to shut down on those things. And as a matter of fact, when they start looking at not just the incoming, but they look historically and they start finding that the courts have had their doors wide open to every problem under the sun, from life, CO2, and all of these things. Like they're the grand poobah that gets to tell us how to live our lives. We do not have a judiciary form of government. We have a Republican form of government. Ah, if you start seeing this, then you can start understanding that we could literally downsize all of these different courts. We don't need this many judges. We don't need this many lawyers. And you know what? Can you tell me why unemploying lawyers and judges would be a bad thing? Unemploying people that actually have no purpose of having that job other than the fact that it was created to assume powers not granted. How is that, you know, not a win for us? So, and I can see how all the Karens would melt down and everything else, but when it comes down to going into the courts and downsizing them according to the limited roles and responsibilities, no more sliding into the federal courts over matters that don't arise under the Constitution. Just shut it down and actually downsize it. Now, the other thing is that DOGE actually should force Congress to do their job in controlling the court. And actually, Congress should be slapped big time for allowing the court to manage itself. That needed an amendment for that to happen. Folks, when I get this enumerated constitution done, I'm going to have this big highlight. And this is all of this area that you're going to see is going to have this back highlight. And this back highlight is literally going to tell you that everything in this area cannot just be legally, you know, it can't be changed by statute, can't be changed, you know, by discretion of Congress or the courts or the president. These words are immutable. The only way your representation from 30,000 can go to 750,000 to 1,000,000 is by an amendment to the Constitution. The only way these words can be changed is through an amendment. Go look at why we have an 11th Amendment. Go look at why we have a 12th Amendment. These areas that they wanted to play with, they literally had to change the Constitution. Go look at the very first amendment out of the Bill of Rights. We've exposed this to you. This is the process that would constitutionally change the representation from 30,000 to 40,000 and constitutionally change from 40,000 to 50,000 when certain parameters were being met. These thresholds were being created. And it was brilliant that Madison did this. But more brilliant in this amendment, and again, this is the divine hand of providence, it showed us that you just can't discriminately go in and change by your discretion. Well, we need to change this. No. And as a matter of fact, I can understand that there was a point in time because we didn't have technology. We really did need to do something. But were we really willing to compromise our representation, the quality of our representation, from 30,000 to 750,000? That's not 10 times. That's not 100 times. That's almost 300 times more. That's where we're heading. That's not where we belong. compliance of the Constitution is critical, period, period. Now, one of the things that we need to do, because I know that, and I'm going to get into this rat hole about justice, I understand that there are people, and I'm not one that says you can't have justice. I'm only the one advocating getting things right. And I'm going to tell you that we got to get things right. You can't have justice until we get things right. And so I want you to start understanding the depth of the corruption of the courts and our legal system. This literally needs to be significantly overhauled and changed. Okay? Which, what does this mean? That it will take time. It's going to take time to literally change the breed of our lawyers and judges. We're going to have to literally change this class of jurists to actually be focused on justice and not trying to actually ingratiate themselves and figuring out and being complicit in corruption. So, we've got some problems. I mean, the existing court systems, do you really think we're going to get justice? We're going to get restored with our gold? We're going to get these things taken? The land and those types of things, absolutely. But when it comes to the gold and silver, we can prove our cases, and we may have to use military force. But this becomes the real question. I believe that those who are seeking justice will get their justice, especially if it is true. But I think we need to actually look at how we win the war and how we win the world. Because sometimes some things are just more important. Providing liberty for all, I think, is far more important than it is getting our pound of flesh and vengeance. The other point that needs to be put on the table is that there will be complications. What is the veracity of the evidence? How do we know that what we're looking at is really the truth? Some of these things may be concocted. We live in a time now, folks. I hope you understand. Elon Musk is going hyper into AI. Government is going to go hyper into AI. They're going to manufacture crap that will look so real. And the computer will actually be able to just rewrite everything. The question is, will we have enough hard copy evidence and old documents and so forth to prove our case on all of these things? Or will they be burnt down like what happened in LA or, you know, Hawaii or these other places where they've actually been directing, you know, this type of warfare in expunging people, taking their properties and so on? So, folks, there's a level of complication in trying to get there. Now, I have not dove into education, which is what we need to do. There's a few other things that we've kind of talked about. I want to talk about the Mint. I want to talk about the importance of a state stepping forward and, you know, actually becoming, you know, this initiating this Republic review. I was hoping that, you know, getting people to start realizing rescinding the 17th or going down this path of restoring suffrage, that is the initiation of actually looking at the Constitution and auditing it and determining, you know, how did we lose our suffrage when the Constitution protected it? How are we in this position? I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review as well as my description version of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.